In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, yeah, it's time to talk movies. Alan Adams joining us in studio. Good day, Mr. Adams.
Delicious.
Would help if Carrie turned your mic on there.
You son of a. Oh, that, yeah, I can't. Yeah, yeah, gonna, yeah. Hot mic.
Yep, it's on now. Welcome. I don't like this cold so much. How about you?
I'm not a big fan, but it's one of those things where you just sort of acknowledge that this is the reality of the situation. And
all right.
Just, you know.
All right.
I mean, April's not that far away.
yeah. I feel worse now. Thank you. What have you been up to lately?
Oh, you know, doing the thing. There was a, we had a death in the extended family, and so we did attend a memorial service on Saturday, and very sad, but also, you know, a time of of good memories and that sort of thing. I will say, the priest who was the family priest for many years has been retired. And maybe a little rusty like, you know, the order of things and whatnot, which honestly was kind of nice to have, like, just a little bit of, like, something to sort of relieve the tension a little bit.
Sure.
You know, it's nice to have those moments of laughter in a very somber sort of situation. So that was nice. But yes, it was a lovely service, and it was you don't like the circumstances, but it was lovely to see everybody and that sort of thing. And then yesterday, I don't know if I've talked to you about this, Rich. Sheridan and I are symphony people now.
Well, I saw that you were there a couple weeks ago. We had pictures posted.
We're subscribers to the BSO, and they had a lovely performance yesterday afternoon. Wonderful piano player who came in, and they did Tchaikovsky's Sixth. I don't know if you've this Tchaikovsky guy, pretty good at music. I don't know if you knew that.
I've heard that. Yeah, I've seen his name come up. It's spelled funny.
Yes, there's maybe a few more letters than you would think would be necessary.
Right,
But no, it was an absolutely lovely performance. Like, we've greatly enjoyed the times that we've gone, and we were talking about it on the way out. It's one of those things where we're just really glad that we're able to do something like that, and it's so different from the other sort of things in our lives. So it was lovely. Lucas Richmond does a great job, and we're looking forward to the next one.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, we're glad to have you here as we roll into Thanksgiving week, one of our favorite weeks of the year, and you've got a whole bunch of movies, three of them to talk about.
Yeah, it's I'm not entirely sure how I managed to put three together, but. It helps, the ubiquity of streaming services certainly makes that a little bit easier. Although we did get to the theater for one. We've got three. One theatrical release and a pair of holiday themed films on the streaming services. Where would you like to start?
I don't know, because I want to save Christmas Story for last. So let's do the other one, holiday mode. Let's go with Spirited.
Okay, so. Spirited. It's streaming on Apple TV Plus, and it's an adaptation of A Christmas Carol. And I can already hear you, just like I can hear eyes rolling back, just like, oh, hey, great, another adaptation of A Christmas Carol, just what I wanted.
Are the Beatles in it?
No. America should be so lucky. I am someone who I ride pretty hard for A Christmas Carol. I have a very deep love and affection for that story, for all iterations of that story, whether, you know, stage, screen, or in between. Like, I just I love A Christmas Carol. Like, even the bad Christmas carols, I find some joy in. So I was here for it. I'm like, oh, okay. Oh, it's a riff on A Christmas Carol. Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds. It's like, okay, that's a fun pairing.
Yeah.
Like, we already know that Will Ferrell can do a holiday movie. Let's see how this goes. So, a couple of things. One, I didn't know it was a musical going in. And I'm not just like a, oh, they sing some songs sometimes musical, like full on, like gigantic production number, Busby Berkeley style musical. To the point where we're watching, and at one point, Sheridan turns to me and she's like, "I keep waiting for Esther Williams to swim by."
Oh, wow!
And it was just, wow. And it's that kind of vibe, that sort of old school, like you know, cast of thousands, like all these people, like you know, intricately choreographed, gigantic production numbers. And it's also, and it's an interesting take on the story, one that centers more on the spirits than on our central, you know, Scrooge or Scrooge, you know, analog. And, like, the music's good. It's funny. It looks great. Like, it's really just, it checks a lot of boxes for me. The basic gist is we have the Ghost of Christmas Present. That's Will Ferrell, who has been spent the last couple of centuries working for Jacob Marley. Played by Patrick Page. And the whole deal is Jacob Marley basically runs this entire gigantic operation of spirits, you know, beyond the veil that dedicate, they spend the entire year like researching and, you know, and reconstructing in an effort to convert one person every Christmas. And so that's the deal. Like they spend their entire year, they pick out their candidate. And they spend the year doing the research and trying to figure out, like, what memories, you know, what this, what that they need to do in order to change this person from being, you know, a bad person to a good one. And that's what they do. And it's, you know, and so it's an interesting take on the whole notion. But what happens is, you know, Christmas Present is sort of. He's thinking it might be time to retire. And retirement for these guys is they basically get to go back to Earth and be mortals again.
Oh,
like that's the deal.
Oh, wow, nice.
Pretty slick. So he's back and forth. Like he's still really dedicated to the work. You know, his coworkers, specifically his closest coworkers, Christmas Past, played by Sunita Mani, who's very good. And Yet to Come, voiced by Tracy Morgan, which is delightful. Everyone's like, well, maybe you should move on. And he's back and forth until he inadvertently encounters a guy named Clint Briggs. And that's Ryan Reynolds. He's a PR flack, has his own firm, and he has dedicated his life to saying or doing whatever he has to do in order to win whatever needs winning. Like just a real POS, you know, like just not a good person in any stretch of the imagination. And
which I know the way you feel about Ryan Reynolds, it seems like the perfect fit.
You know, like, you know, let me just say, like, you know, sometimes the smug smirk works really well. Yeah, so he's, you know, and so Christmas Present is like, that's my guy. And everyone's like, oh, no, you can't. Like, it's too much. It's not going to. And he's like, nope, that's our guy. We're going to do it. And so despite everyone's misgivings, they decide, okay, Clint Briggs, he's their, they call them perps, which is hilarious. he's their perp for this year. But Christmas Eve comes, and, well, things don't go the way that anybody wanted them to. Clint Briggs, not necessarily engaged by everything that's happening in the way that one would expect. Meanwhile, Christmas Present has somehow made himself visible to one of Clint Briggs's colleagues, a woman named Kimberly, played by the wonderful Octavia Spencer. And so, you know, we get to watch them sort of yo-yo through past and present as Clint Briggs starts getting into Christmas Present's head a little bit. And then we start to learn a little bit more about his past and his path to becoming what he has become. And I'm not going to spoil anything. There's a pretty big reveal that if you're paying attention, they telegraph it pretty obviously, but I'm not going to spoil it. And then we just watch as, you know, as these two sort of go back and forth and, you know, it's an antagonistic relationship, but they also, there's also some, you know, shared sort of, you know, there's an affection there too, and so it's that kind of push pull kind of relationship that really that bears out very nicely. look, it's really good. Like, I wasn't I was gonna dig it, like, just because of the, you know, the combination of source material and whatnot.
Right.
But it's really very good. The music is excellent. The songs are well written. They're very much like big, bold musical numbers. Musical numbers, I might add, sung by the actual cast.
Wow.
No voice doubles in this. I was very pleased to see that. You know, and it's like Will Ferrell's not a singer, but these songs were definitely crafted to stay well within the ranges of the various actors. So it's like, it's clearly well thought out. They also do a bunch of dancing, which is wonderful. You know, the production design is great, particularly the realm of the spirits is this wonderful sort of wonderful kind of bureaucratic kind of place. The jokes are good. They have some great one-liners, as well as a couple of running gags that are really solid, including an ongoing bit where they talk about the unnecessary nature of Christmas Carol remakes, which is pretty funny. A couple of digs at both Ferrell's and Reynolds's sort of CV scattered throughout. So it's this wonderful sort of very self-aware, but not overly so. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, it's not like, you know, like a little nudge in the rib cage, but they don't keep going. They just every once in a while something's pointed out where it's just like, oh yeah, okay, you know what this looks like, and you're sharing that awareness with us, and it's fun. And so, yeah, I was delighted by this movie. I expected to like it. I did not expect to like it as much as I did. I think it has a shot to be the sort of movie that that winds up on at least some people's annual holiday rewatch list.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's got that kind of energy to it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it even more now. Alan Adams talking movies with us here on Downtown. I love it when comedy and horror get together, if it's done well. Is that what's on the menu?
Food for thought, Rich. I'm gonna lead with this story. As Sheridan and I were walking out of the movie, we were near a trio of young ladies, probably in high school, would be my guess. And we're walking out, and we're sitting, and we're kind of back and forth talking about how you know, how insightful the movie was, and how thought provoking, and you know, kind of having that, like, we were really engaged by it. And the young ladies are basically talking about how it wasn't scary enough.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, I thought it would be scarier, and it's just like, and I just start to laugh, and I'm like, tell me you don't get the movie without telling me you don't get it.
Right.
Because if you're paying attention, movie real scary. Maybe not in the blood and guts kind of way, but real scary. So, yeah, we're talking about The Menu, the new movie starring Anya Taylor-Joy and Ralph Fiennes, Nicholas Hoult, John Leguizamo, like, just a wonderful cast of wonderfully talented people involved in this movie. You mentioned horror and comedy, and I would add that, because both elements are very much present in this film, but I would add, one of the joys that I've always taken from genre movies, particularly horror movies, is their ability to mask fairly incisive social commentary through genre, and that is very much the case in this film, because it is a wonderful deconstruction of the notion of class, this idea of haves and have-nots, and what it means when a certain line is crossed between the two. The basic gist of the film is that we have this, we meet these two people, Margot, that's Anya Taylor-Joy, and Tyler, Nicholas Hoult. They're on a dock, and they're waiting. And we find out that they're waiting because they are a part of the exclusive guest list for tonight's seating at Hawthorne. That's the name of a restaurant. It's also the name of the island, the isolated island on which the restaurant sits. There is nothing on this island except for the restaurant. And so, like, a boat comes, takes them and the rest of the cohort. And it's, you know, it's pretty, like, it's... you've got like a trio of like tech finance bros. You've got an old rich couple. This is their you know, this they've been to the restaurant multiple times. You've got a faded movie star and his assistant, and you've got a prominent food critic and her editor. Like, so this is the cohort that is arriving at this restaurant. They take the boat and they go, and then the boat leaves, and it's like, okay, well, we're here now. They go, they get a tour from the sort of, I don't know, like front of house, like concierge type named Elsa, played by the wonderful Hong Chao. They get a tour of the island where they start to realize that things are maybe a little weird out here because it's so isolated and because the chef is so demanding. Everybody who works there lives there. So we get to see this weird bunkhouse with just like rows of identical beds. And this is where like the cooks, the sous chefs, the wait staff, the sommelier, like everybody lives in this weird bunkhouse except for Chef, who has his own little cottage. But no one goes to Chef's cottage. So we get they're given this tour of the island and they learn that, you know, everything that they're going to eat is drawn from the island itself or the ocean surrounding it and all this very much the sort of fetishized like high end dining experience that that rings pretty true. Like, I mean, like as far as that goes, as someone who is an admitted consumer of far too much food television, like I recognize elements of this sort of place. Like I'm familiar with the idea.
Right.
They go, they get to the restaurant, they're seated, and then the meal begins, and we meet Chef Slowik. That's Ralph Fiennes, just an absolute like superstar of the culinary world, who is using this restaurant to sort of push things to the edge, such as it is. And we start eating, and it's the kind of meal that you would expect at this kind of place. Everything is very intricately constructed. My favorite is the bread course. It's a breadless bread plate, so it's basically like all the stuff you put on bread, but no actual bread.
Wow!
Just hilariously on the nose as far as like, but where the movie plays out, the beats of the movie are illustrated by each course. So we get the amuse-bouche and the first course, and we're told on screen what each dish is.
Nice.
It's such a wonderful touch. But things start to get weird, and they get particularly weird around the fourth course, and that's where I'm going to stop. Because a lot of stuff happens that genuinely surprised me over the course of this film, and I do not want to spoil it for anyone.
Wow, okay.
And again, if you've seen the trailers, like, you know that there are some things that I'm clearly leaving out. However, contextually, it's better for you to be surprised because so much interesting stuff starts happening, particularly when it becomes clear that maybe Margot doesn't necessarily belong in the same way that these other people belong. And so the chef is left to sort of there's this sort of back and forth between the two, like basically boiling down to which side are you on? Are you one who is served? Like that sort of breakdown. And she's the one who kind of straddles that line. So she's got this wonderful sort of specific insight as to what's going on. It's so smart, Rich. Like, it's such a wonderful sort of clever and really engaging sort of look at that idea of what it means to have versus, those who serve versus those who are served. Like, that's a wonderful way to sort of break it down as far as, like, what this movie is, quote unquote, about. That said, it's also a pretty solid thriller. Like, it's got some really great beats, some wildly funny, like, bits of like very dark comedy, like very dark. But if that's your thing, like you're really gonna dig into this. And again, like it's got a marvelous cast, like Anya Taylor-Joy, like she's got this sort of naivete in her eyes that when she's able to properly weaponize it, like she does in this movie, like it really just it does this wonderful thing where it kind of drops her into a situation or circumstances in a way that both allows us to empathize with her even as she seems completely other. So it's really fascinating. She's an incredibly talented actor. Nicholas Holt is wonderful as the self-absorbed, self-involved foodie type. John Leguizamo plays our faded movie star. He's fantastic. And just like, I mean, across the board, the ensemble is great. Ralph Fiennes is remarkable in this movie because it demands that he be incredibly reserved the whole time. And so, you know, the only sort of, we get these sort of flashes of emotion, whether it's, resentment or anger or happiness or whatever. And they're just quick flashes. Meanwhile, his entire cadre of cooks and waitstaff and whoever are blindly and obsessively devoted to him and his vision, despite the fact of the extremity of that vision in this particular on this particular menu. So yeah, it's so well crafted. There are twists within twists. Like it's like, oh, I see what's coming, and then it's like, oh wait, that's just what you wanted me to see coming. Here's something else. And they're not afraid to punctuate a really tense, scary moment with a joke or a sight gag that fits beautifully within the context of the story they're telling. Like it's not like it's not out of left field. Like it all makes sense within the context of what you're watching, and it all comes together in this wonderful sort of. Well, like I compared it to a stew. It's like all these weird sort of disparate ingredients that you've just sort of put on the stovetop and let simmer and brought up to a boil. And what you get is something that contains notes of all of it, but is sort of different from all of it as well. And Rich, I got to tell you, it is delicious.
Oh, can't wait. Now that's streaming, right?
No, that's in the theater.
Oh, that's in the theater. Okay. All right. And finally, oh man, I want it to be good because Ralphie's back and the old gang. I want A Christmas Story Christmas to be at least okay.
I was very nervous about this movie.
Yeah.
Man, A Christmas Story is a huge part of the holiday season for me. Like I loved it when it came out.
Yep.
You know, I loved it. I loved it up through like we were a family that went out of our way to watch this movie before it was like a thing. And, and now, of course, we have the 24-hour marathons and whatnot. And the truth is, like, it's me. Like, I'm the person, like, I'm the reason why those marathons exist. Like, me and people like me. And so, like, that combination of that sepia-tinged nostalgia and yet, and frankly, fairly realistic portrayal of what it means to be a kid. Like, you put those things together, and it's just, like, all the pieces, the classic bits, the beats, like, all this stuff. It's just an absolute classic. And so, why are we doing a sequel? Like, that's the question. Yeah. It's like, I kept asking myself. I'm like, why is this happening? Like, I'm uncomfortable with the fact that this is happening. Like, I've seen too many of these, like, decades late, like, Lego sequels just fall flat and just not deliver on what I wanted them to deliver or what anyone might have expected them to deliver. So I was apprehensive when I sat down. Rich, it's okay.
Okay. Whew, good.
It's okay.
Good. Even without Darren McGavin.
That's...
And without the Gene Shepherd narration.
Yes. The absence of Darren McGavin is the plot point on which the entire film hinges. Like that's, so he is part of the movie, even though he's not in the movie, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And you know, Peter Billingsley as, handling the narration, it makes a lot of sense. He's closer to Gene Shepard than you think he is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, in terms of how he sounds. And again, like, though, I mean, ostensibly the bit was, like, that was grown Ralphie talking about his childhood. Yeah. And so the transition, it works. Did I miss it? Yes, I did. But it did not take long for me to accept the change and move forward.
Well, good.
Yeah. So this film is set in 1973. Ralphie lives in Chicago. Ralphie Peter Billingsley lives in Chicago with his wife Sandy, played by the wonderful Aaron Hayes, and his two kids. And he has basically spent the last year, like, they saved up, and Ralphie was going to take a year, try to make it as a writer. Like, that's what he wanted to do. And so he gave himself 1 year. And, you know, it's the holiday season, so a year's almost up. And it hasn't been going well. He has received a lot of rejections for his 2,000-page sci-fi epic. no one's biting. They're all still cheerful. They're looking forward to the holiday. It's like, you know, because as Ralphie says, he's like, his old man, King Christmas, like, it's going to be great. But then the phone rings and it's his mom. And the old man has passed away. And so Ralphie packs up his family and they go back to Indiana and they go back to the house on Cleveland Street. That's where he meets his mom, played now by Julie Haggerty. The woman, I forget her name.
Melinda Dillon.
Yes, Melinda Dillon was asked to participate, but she actually retired from the business like 15 years ago. So she's
right.
So it's Julie Haggerty, and she basically tells Ralphie, we can't let this be what we think about every Christmas. We have to try for the best Christmas possible. And Ralphie, convinced that this is a mistake, says, okay. And basically commits himself to, you know, to filling his old man's shoes as the king of Christmas, which presents some obstacles along the way, as you might expect. So he's in his hometown. You know, some things don't change. The Bumpuses still live next door. They still have a bunch of dogs. They've changed their affiliation from the old man to Ralphie now, which is pretty funny. Ralphie's kids make friends with one of the Bumpus kids, and so there's some interaction there, which is nice. There are still bullies in the neighborhood, only now they have a snowmobile.
And Scott's still around.
in a pretty delightful reveal towards the end of the film. So he goes out into the, you know, into town. Schwartz and Flick are still around, and it is definitely the dudes who played Schwartz and Flick. And
even his little brother is the same actor, right?
Yep.
That's great.
Yes, Randy, who the dude has literally done nothing since like the 80s.
That's
like,
fantastic.
Like his one of his primary gigs was he ran the tours of the house.
Oh wow.
Back in the day.
That's fantastic.
Flick now owns the bar in town. Schwartz has a very hefty tab at said bar. And they basically, they're still hanging out together. Ralphie goes in, they reunite and, have their sort of, that youthful camaraderie springs back. Meanwhile, Ralphie's still trying to figure out how to make the Christmas happen the way that they want it to happen. There are various mishaps along the way. I'm not gonna go into the specifics. You'll see them when they happen. I will note we do hear the phrase "I triple dog dare you" in a moment that is both delightful and just patently absurd. Like, what happens in this moment does not make any sense, and that's okay. I don't need it to make sense.
Okay.
At a certain point. Yes, Scott Farkas returns, let's just say that, he's playing for a different team now.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I mean, that's kind of it. Like, it's Like, a lot of the beats are the same.
And I like the idea that it's still, in many ways, a period piece.
Yes, very, very much so. Which, I mean, I think that's the way you have to do it.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? And it's just, and to sort of see that, you know, the, you know, obviously times have changed from the first film to the second, but it's still like, you still have that sort of, that sepia tint.
Yeah.
Like that look back at a different time, a different place. And look, I was worried that this would be one of those exercises in pointless nostalgia.
Right.
Like the type of nostalgia that is more toxic than anything else. It's not that. It's very heartfelt. It's clearly being done with love and affection for the first film. Like Peter Billingsley has a story credit. It's very much a labor of love, it feels like, for the people involved.
And he's had a pretty good career as a director.
Yeah, no, he's very he's done very well for himself in Hollywood. It's funny, like, and you know, we talk often about the sort of golden age of young actors in Hollywood. Peter Billingsley was the one. He was the kid. Like, he didn't act like a kid. Like, he wasn't like a hammy child actor. And in the 80s, that's all you had.
Right,
and, you know,
right.
So it's like, he was so different back then. And, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, he would have fit in today. Like,
yes.
You know, young Peter Billingsley would have fit perfectly in so many of these sorts of circumstances that we're seeing. He was capable of doing that. So looking back, and you know, it's just so much of the stuff. It's like, you know, they go sledding, and they go to Higbee's, you know, like all the stuff, like all the pieces are there, but we get to see them viewed still through that like lens of memory. But from like remembering like the adult side of things, yeah, rather than the kid side of things.
Well, that's great.
And then at the end, I won't spoil it for you, but they find a really elegant way to sort of dovetail it with the original film.
Nice.
that really, like, I wasn't at all prepared for it. Got a little dusty.
Yep.
It was just a very nice sort of button on the experience. Look, it's not a Christmas story. Like, it was never gonna be. Like, there's no way you can do that. Like, it's just like, it was just this confluence of circumstances that just wasn't going to happen again. But it also wasn't the sad exercise that I kind of maybe feared it could be.
Right.
Like, and so honestly, like, it's charming. You know, it's a little flawed, sure. Like, it has its issues, but at the end of the day, like, it's a pretty good movie, and considering everything, I'm gonna go ahead and call that a win.
Excellent. Wow, now I'm looking forward to seeing that too. Awesome. Thank you, Al.
Hey, my pleasure.
Great to see you. Hope you and Sheridan and the family have a very fine Thanksgiving.
Back at you.
All right, we'll see you soon.
Yes, sir.